again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Big Red Bus. As I pull out the beautiful monster, Big Red Monster, this is Doug's favorite part of the show where I spend a few minutes describing the exterior and the interior of the Big Red Bus. This version is it's shiny, new, titanium, bulletproof. It's pretty awesome, this version of the Big Red Bus, as I pull it out into the warm streets of Chicago. How you doing, my co-pilot?
I'm about to throw myself out my window.
That description already
of the bus. I got to say, one of the things that always annoys me, and now I'm going to do this exact thing, is I'm going to spend 2 minutes talking about something that has nothing to do with the Chicago Bulls. Every show does that. It's like, oh, what'd you do this weekend? Let's talk about seeing Spider-Man. And I'm like, I don't really want to hear you talk about seeing Spider-Man. I don't care that you saw Spider-Man. I saw Spider-Man, but whatever. So, yeah, now I've wasted everyone else's time. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, instead of talking about Spider-Man, let's talk about a fictional bus and the actual physical features of it. That's what everybody wants to hear. Well, I just do it now because I know it irritates you, so that's the whole reason I'm going to expand it as we keep on going into this.
I've got endeavor. It coming. My wife will love that this happens.
Well, hey, first of all, I want to thank you on behalf of myself, my guests, and everyone who attended the incredible Doug Tonis draft night party. I mean, for anybody who's listening who has not attended, we had people flying in for this one, which was pretty awesome. And, you know, it's getting bigger every year and better every year. It's a collection of what I think is the smartest Bulls fans in a 10-block radius, and it's pretty awesome. What say you?
It's my favorite night of the year every year. It is a little sad. It can't get a whole lot bigger. I don't know that I can fit a whole lot more people in my basement. But I think this year we were around 38. I capped it at 40 people, so I guess we've got room for two more.
All right.
Next year.
One of these days, our mutual friend Mark Kay is going to cross the Pacific or Atlantic. I don't even know which way he's going to come here, but eventually he'll get here, and we'll have a special seat for Mark as we burn a Heinrich jersey in his honor and watch the draft together. So speaking of the draft, I'd love to get your opinion. Why don't we start out with that? It's been so long since we last talked. Let's start out with the draft. Your overall take on it? You feeling good about everything that happened for the beloved?
Sure. I mean, I think it was a lousy draft, right? Like, yeah. You didn't think this was a very strong draft class. And if you saw the guys on the board, I don't think there was anyone in the room who was going, wow, we should have taken insert any player name you can think of instead of Coby White. I mean, I think when Coby White fell to Chicago, every single person in the room was like, yep, we should take Coby White. You know, I mean, so maybe Coby White sucks and it's a terrible pick, but I do think this is a very good chance that this is one of those draft classes, like pretty much, I think 2013 through 2017, almost entirely, where like everyone sucks.
Yeah.
Like, I just think that 2017 was the start of where they got decent again. 2013, 14, 15, and 16, I think we're just 4 years of just god-awful draft classes. And it wouldn't surprise me if this is one of those, and Coby White doesn't end up being a particularly meaningful player, but neither is anyone else. Like, I think that's actually a pretty likely scenario that, yeah, we didn't get someone who's a star. I don't think Coby's a star, but I don't think there was, like, someone else on the board that I feel like, I wish we had that guy.
See, I disagree in the fact, I think there's going to be some good players out of this draft. I just think it was kind of a strange draft in that from about 8 to 40, I think there was very little difference, a very small delta between those picks. It was kind of a very unique situation where, like, a guy like Carson Edwards, who I really like, you know, pick 33rd overall could end up being like a top 5 pick. A top 6 pick when you look in retrospect where he was taken, or, you know, like even a Brandon Clark who just looked great in summer league, who fell pretty far, I think, to 21. It wasn't a lot of delineations between, you know, 8 to the second round, the players actually picked in the second round. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah, completely agree. I think it's a crapshoot draft. So, yes, some people, and like those other years I mentioned, there were some good players that came out of it, but it's just like you weren't sitting there going, like, wow, here's just, like, I used the analogy, and I first heard this, and I love it. It was to describe the 2003 draft and how the Pistons drafted Darko Milicic. And they said it was like, you got a bag with a check for, like, $1 billion. a check for $100 million, a check for $50 million, and a dollar bill. And the Pistons reached in and grabbed the dollar bill.
Exactly.
And so, like, this is like a bag with, like, 50 singles in it in the 10. And so, yeah, you hope you grab the 10. But, like, you know, some bags have got, like, like million-dollar checks in them. This wasn't one of those bags where, like, you got, like, a bunch of high-value money, high-value checks and just a couple small ones. This is where, you know, you're going to stumble into someone good almost no matter what. This is the opposite scenario where, like, yeah, there's just, like, it's going to end up with a bunch of crap, and a couple of players will end up having amazing work ethic or improve on something you wouldn't expect or whatever, and they're going to come out of that and they're going to be good players. But I just don't think this is a draft where you're going to see a lot of good players come out of it where, you know, you had good odds of figuring out who was the guy who's going to separate themselves.
I want to touch on something that I heard on, I think, one of your Bulls beat shows recently, which I agreed with wholeheartedly. And it was kind of first brought to my attention by Will Gottlieb, Sir Will Gottlieb, a mutual friend of ours on Twitter. And he had a really good tweet where he's like, it's funny how basically the gist of the tweet was the whole league's moving towards positionless, you know, system, but everybody's still trying to find traditional point guard. And I kind of I think it was something to that effect. I'm probably doing a tremendous disservice to his tweet, but I agree with that completely. When you look at some of the teams that ended up in the Western Conference Finals, look at Portland, look at Golden State. Neither of those teams have a traditional point guard, and in fact, they're, you know, primarily shoot first players that are combo guards. And I think the league has really kind of gone away from that. And, you know, everybody's looking, it seemed like in Chicago, I kept hearing people complain, we need to find, you know, almost like a John Stockton type to play the point guard position. And that's not at all what I feel we need. I think the key to the game now is versatility and having guys like the Saransky that can play three positions. Or I even think Dunn has tremendous defensive versatility. Having as many guys that can play as many positions and stop feeling like it's imperative that we need to get a quote-unquote traditional point guard, because we had one not that long ago. I think Rajon Rondo is about the closest you'll find to a traditional point guard in today's game. But, you know, what say you? Why don't you expound on that for a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I talked about that at length on the last show, and I just said, look at every good team in the league. There are no good real point guards anymore. It's like, if you even think of, like, the last 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, however many years, I go back to Magic Johnson. That was the last time a pass-first, supervision, eyes in the back of his head, you know, behind-the-back, no-look pass, land-the-money guy won a title. Like, Magic was the last point guard of that type to win a title. Mm-hmm. That's it. And if you think after that, how many guys like that have even been in the league? And I came up with Chris Paul, Jason Kidd, Rajon Rondo.
Yeah, well, Jason Kidd won a title with the Mavericks, but he wasn't their primary.
Yeah, yeah, but he wasn't playing in that mold anymore at that point.
Right,
he was just sitting around the perimeter, throwing entry passes to Dirk and hitting open threes. So, I mean, like, there's not many even guys who even qualify as that. I mean, I don't know if I'm missing any over time. There's probably some lesser guys. Ricky Rubio is probably another one. But there's just not many guys like that. Like, and the ones that have been out there, they've not led their teams anywhere special. I mean, I'm not saying I wouldn't like that guy if we had him, but it certainly isn't an imperative, and it certainly isn't a key metric that all the championship teams have. Like, I think really every team isn't moving towards a system where they now value positionless basketball. I think we've kind of been there for a pretty long time in actuality.
Good point. Yeah, and let's touch a little bit on free agency. We talked about the draft, and I think we're both in agreement. You know, they did about as good as they could have from where they were picked. I love Gafferty. He looked fantastic in the summer league. Let's get your take on what they did in free agency. And, you know, I'd also like to touch a little bit on the general tenor or outrage, which I think was a little bit less so. It seems like the smarter fans really realized that the Bulls, I think, hit a home run here. But there was still a significant percentage of fans who were, you know, still outraged that we weren't playing in the deep water with some of the other, you know, free agents out there.
Yeah, I don't think you can call it a home run. I mean, We got Kawhi Leonard that called a home run.
Well, it was a triple.
I mean, it's not a home run, but it, I mean, it's like they didn't strike out either, right? They didn't foul out or hit into a double play or anything ridiculous.
They didn't do a Knicks.
I don't know why we're using baseball analogies to describe basketball. It's probably terrible. But
let's keep it up for a while.
I mean, it wasn't a triple play.
I'm going to balk at your suggestion there, Doug.
I don't even know enough about baseball to come up with any more terms. I'm sorry.
All right.
It was a good offseason. You know, it was a solid offseason. They made smart moves. I think it also makes the decision to trade for Porter a better decision, because you look at it now, you see the way things unfolded, and I think the Bulls view that, hey, we aren't really going to be able to land one of these free agents based on where we're positioned right now, so we're better off tying up this money, trading for Porter with these expiring deals, and basically that's going to be one of our free agent signings. I think that now looks like a really good decision. It wasn't one I was a big fan of at the time, but I think now it really does look like a good decision. And the other guys that they signed are, you know, like real players. We're going to have real depth. Like, we're going to have if a few guys get hurt, we're not going to be playing 5 G League players at once next year. So this is a team that should be able to withstand, you know, injury or two. Certainly you're not going to be able to lose like half the starters for the whole season like they did last year and still do well. Like, can't withstand that much injuries. But they will be able to deal with injuries a little bit better this year. And the players that we think can be good are going to play now a game where they have other good players around them who can finish and who can make plays and who can pick them up when they're playing poorly and who can take some of the pressure off them and, you know, help ease the defensive pressure. So I'm really very happy with what they did this offseason under the context of what I think they could have done. I don't think it could have gone a whole lot better. Both Young and Satoransky were high on my list of guys I wanted prior to free agency starting. I think Cornette was a good pickup as well, and I'm really happy.
Yeah, and, you know, I understand there were a lot of people still upset because we weren't going after, quote-unquote, any of the big guys and in defining, you know, Kyrie Irving, and we weren't even in discussions with that. And my general point was, why are you upset now? Like, if you were upset about that, that was something you should have complained about when we brought Otto Porter Jr. in, because that was the time where it was clear that the Bulls were not going to be playing in this. So you're just going to use this as another opportunity to have to generate feigned outrage and just complain again? It's so irritating. And yeah, and I know other teams made risks, but, you know, I would argue, Doug, that if, let's just pretend all these guys that were free agents and restricted free agents were thrown into a pool, and let's pretend that Otto Porter Jr. was an unrestricted free agent. With a lot of these names that are out there, even the big names, there are a lot of question marks. I mean, even a player as great as Kevin Durant, that is a serious injury. He's going to miss all of next year. And very few players have come back from that injury and played. No one has ever come back from an injury and played up to the level where they were before. I'm not saying Durant would have been, you know, if you're going to go against Otto Porter Jr. or Durant, what's the better pick? I'm not saying that you'd go with Otto Porter Jr. I'm just saying that Otto Porter Jr. would be in the top 10 if he was an unrestricted free agent. And I think he'd be a lot higher than people would give him credit for. Like a player like Middleton. Is Middleton really miles ahead of Otto Porter Jr. as a basketball player? I don't believe so. I think those two are right there in the same tier. What say you?
I would probably say Middleton is a pretty good chunk ahead of Porter. But, yeah, I don't know. I think Middleton was one of the whole Milwaukee situation was really interesting if we want to get into other teams' offseason. I was not as huge a fan of Middleton. I was really surprised that they signed him to his massive deal, because I think they bid against, like, no one.
Yeah.
Like, no one else could give him the 5 years, and no one was going to go max on him, I don't think. You know, I just think they bid against themselves.
But they had a tough, whatever. They didn't have a choice. I mean, they were in a tough spot.
I would have kept Brogdon.
Yeah.
If I was taking Brogdon for, like, $18.5 million, or Middleton for like $35 million or whatever it'll end up averaging, I would have kept Brogdon.
I love Brogdon too.
Use that extra money for something else.
Yeah,
I guess. But yeah,
The reason Brogdon, again, though, a bigger picture of all these free agents and restricted free agents. Brogdon, the reason he was picked in the second round was due to that foot. He missed time this year because of that foot. The reason why he's not a max player is because of that foot. There are massive question marks around that player. And you can go up and down the list and look at every player and their health. You know, you put Middleton much farther ahead of Otto Porter Jr. I would disagree. I think Otto Porter Jr. overall is a lot closer to Middleton than what you would probably give him credit for. But regardless, my general point still stands. Like, Otto Porter Jr., if he was an unrestricted free agent, would absolutely be a top 10 free agent.
Well, Porter has his own injury problems. Like, why are you, like, completely discounting that? But
they're not as serious, because they're not anywhere near as serious as Brogdon's.
No, I mean, it seemed like his having issues that tracked from the last 2 years that were related. I've not really, like, looked so deeply into his injury history, but that was... People from Washington were bringing it up, like, "Hey, this dude's got like hip problems that have, like, you know, been an issue for a couple of years now." And that, so I don't know. I mean, either way, regardless, I'm happy with Otto Porter. I'm happy with what the Bulls have done. I think it's gonna be a really fun season for the first time in a while. I know we were both excited about last year.
Yeah,
I think we both maybe underestimated how much depth the Bulls lacked last season.
Yeah.
And we were really counting on their star players to step up. And I think when they were healthy, they didn't actually play that bad. I think Chris Dunn ended up being a lot more disappointed. We were both really high on what he might develop into, and that didn't really work out. He kind of stalled and maybe even regressed a little bit. But going into this year, the thing that you're excited about is they've got these couple guys you feel can be stars, and then, or near stars, maybe. Or guys who just grow into better players. But now they've got a bunch of good players around them. I mean, you actually feel good about the depth chart, and you're not even talking yet about Denzel Valentine. I just threw you a bone there. You can talk about him.
Thank you. I can talk about him all you want if you want to get in.
Yeah, I mean, but like, we're not even like talking about Denzel Valentine giving us anything or Chris Dunn giving us anything. I mean, those are guys that could still maybe give you something, or Chandler Hutchison giving us anything. Yeah. Like, we're assuming those guys are all zero, and we're still excited about the depth of the team. And, yeah, so I think it's going to be a fun year.
I agree 100%. I really think this team is positioned to do some exciting things, and I would be absolutely shocked. Well, just put it this way. If they have another injury-riddled season like last year, if they lose six rotation players due to injury, it's not going to be a great season. They won't make the playoffs.
Yeah.
But the odds of that happening again, you know, after the injury, there were tons of injuries in the season before. And I got into a little bit of an argument on Twitter, and I can't remember where the last – I think on my guest appearance on Bulls Gold, like, you know, somebody was making the argument, well, you got to fire the trainer. And, I mean, Doug, I don't know if you feel this way, but a lot of these injuries are kind of like, you know, Wendell Carter Jr. falls on his finger. What trainer is going to prevent that from happening? Lauri Markkanen hurts his elbow in practice. You know, a lot of these injuries to me are just – they're a little bit on the fluke nature, you know, and it's something to pay attention to, because, you know, Lauri, some players are more susceptible to injury and injury prone, and it's something to, you know, pay attention to. But I think a lot of them have been a little bit, you know, done falling on his face and all that stuff. I don't know if you agree, but a lot of it has that kind of air of, well, this is a one in a million, and it's not going to continue to happen every season.
I'm completely with you. I actually spoke about this on the latest Bulls Beat, which is probably, I just recorded right before this show, so probably come out a little bit before this one, because I'm just going to post it without doing any editing or anything, because I'm super lazy, and then you'll probably put some real effort into making this all sound good.
That's right. But, exactly.
Yeah, that's how I roll.
Mine will be
so,
a prime.
So anyway, but with the thing, the comment I made, the same, I think this may have been the same point you made on Bulls Gold, is like, it's not like these guys are all pulling up with hamstring injuries or calf strains, you know, or like they're dehydrated and we're throwing them out there. Or like, you know, like things you could, they're not like, it's not like Tom Thibodeau was running them out there for like 50 minutes, you know, game by making them do wind sprints at halftime or something stupid. I mean, it is injuries that are just weird and are not things that you would expect to repeat or happen again. And so I'm completely with you. I think it's fluky. I think the Bulls' reputation for injuries is a lot worse because they were overplaying guys in the Tom Thibodeau era. They were probably ignoring a lot of the things you would do to keep guys healthy in that era. The Bulls, that's one of the reasons they got rid of him. Mm-hmm. So if you want to know, like, why you think he'd be better, I mean, they had a great coach. People felt this guy was a great coach. And they got rid of him because they didn't feel he could handle players. So, I mean, I take that pretty seriously. And I do think, like you said, for the reasons you said, that the last 2 years have been more of just an unlucky happenstance than a trend with the trainers or anything else.
Yep. So good to hear. I think we're both on agreement there that, you know, hey, the odds for them to have another season like they did in the last 2 years injury-wise are about one in a trillion. It's just, it doesn't happen at all.
I think they're probably a little higher than that. But
okay, so that's a good thing. So let's assume
we do think that they should have better luck.
Let's assume they're going to be relatively healthy, and I think that's a fair assumption. And what I want to go into now is drill down a little bit on the East, because I'm of the opinion the East overall got significantly worse, became worse, despite, you know, obviously Durant coming. He's not going to be playing next year, and Irving just switching teams. But let's go a little bit into what I feel are the six teams that are better than the Bulls right now. Do you agree with me that there are six teams definitely better than the Bulls, and who are those teams?
Well, I guess, I mean, obviously Milwaukee and Philadelphia are the two teams in the East that have a chance to do something, right?
Yep. I got Philly winning it.
I'm guessing someone is going to say Boston that maybe has a chance to do something, but I don't think so, and just knowing you, I doubt you think so either.
Well, I think they're better than the Bulls, though. I
think they're better than the Bulls. Yes. Yeah. I got Boston better than the Bulls.
They are definitely, to me, a not in the Philly-Milwaukee class. They are absolutely a step below. I don't understand, like, last year, they didn't play well last year. They were, what, fourth or fifth seed. And in what universe did they get better? They lost Horford, and they lost Irving. And Kemba Walker, yeah, he's a decent player. He's a good player, but I don't think they're a better team.
For a season, I might take Kemba over Irving. I mean, though he's older, he's actually going to degrade faster.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I don't think he's a better – probably not a better player, maybe – he gives off a better vibe, like the vibe with Kyrie was so bad that maybe that helps. But then, yes, you lost Horford and got nothing.
Yeah,
there's no way.
Oh, better. The great canter. Yeah. So we're in agreement though. So we got Toronto. I just gave away one. Milwaukee, Philly, the Celtics. Toronto, I still have ahead of the Bulls. Probably.
I'm a little surprised at how high everyone is on Toronto. Like, pretty much all their pieces. They lost Danny Green. They lost Kawhi Leonard. And, you know, a lot of their other pieces are, like, really look like they're on the verge of just collapse.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to tentatively agree with you that they're probably better than the Bulls. But I would not be surprised at all if Toronto just completely falls apart. Like, just drops down to, like, 30 wins this year.
That's a great call, Doug. I totally forgot about Green, who was, you know, he didn't play well in the playoffs, but he was very important for them throughout the regular season. His advanced stats were out of this world. And Kawhi is so good. I mean, the only thing I would counter with is, you know, Siakam definitely absolutely took steps last year. They did play a lot of games without him. I don't know what the record was, you know, really.
Very good without him. But Lowry is definitely going to be worse. Gasol is definitely going to be worse.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of downside to that roster, and people said, oh, they're still going to be a playoff team for sure. And I'm like, I don't know why you think that. I think Toronto is a team that's just like, they might be the fourth best team, but they could easily be out of the playoffs in my mind. I don't think that they're a step above anyone. To me, Boston is like maybe the only other team that I feel is kind of like in another tier. I think every other team has some risks.
Okay. Good call. So right now we have the top two, obviously Philly, the Bucks, then and a step below is Boston at three.
Yeah.
And then, but do you agree that Toronto? Right now, do you have Toronto? I do have Toronto ahead of the Bulls.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if I'm placing bets, I would bet Toronto is better than the Bulls. I actually just don't think that they're. I think like after those three I named, and I might be forgetting one team. Who are your other two teams?
Well, Nets.
Are you going to say
Nets.
Brooklyn?
Yeah, Brooklyn.
And I got the Pacers. Is it Miami? Is it
No, I don't have Miami. I have the Pacers.
Indy? Yeah. To me, Indy is another team. I mean, they lost Young. They lost Bojan.
Yeah. Those are two huge losses.
Oladipo is not going to come back till like January. That's like another team. I could just like everyone just assumes they're going to be great, and I'm like, I'm not sure why you think that's true. Like, it could be, but like they have a lot of question marks. Yeah. And then the Nets, I'm like, Kyrie Irving is kind of like seems like a psychopath. Like, I just I don't know. Like,
I don't know about that.
I don't know if that's gonna like. I don't think they're going to be awful, but I'm not sure. Like, he's a leader of men. Like, what did they do like this for this year, right? They replaced D'Angelo Russell with Kyrie Irving. That's, like, effectively, like, the plan of this year. I don't know all their minor moves that they got. Like,
well, they lost
they
Ed also Davis.
Got DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
They lost some. They had to lose other players because they had all this cap room.
Yeah, they lost Ed Davis. Yeah, I mean, I think overall they're better. Like, to me, there is a delta between Russell and Irving. Like, I think people are going a little bit overboard just because it's the Celtics and everybody in the press wants to defend Danny Ainge. And I'm just, like, besmirching Kyrie Irving. To me, he's still a better player than D'Angelo Russell. However,
sure. I agree. Just all I'm saying is, like, but what were the Nets last year? Like a 42-win team or something? Like,
exactly. Yeah.
I don't think with their overall moves this year. Like, you're ecstatic if you're a Nets fan because you got Durant and you have to now hope he gets healthy, and then you hope those two guys do enough to like make your team better next year. But this year, like, would it shock you if the Nets won just 42 games again? Would you be like, oh, wow, I didn't see that coming? I mean, they're not, like, any special tier this year.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I agree. They have some good players. You know, Dinwiddie's okay. LeVert's okay. You know, they're good players. They're good. I don't want to diminish them.
No, I
don't think they're a 50-win team. I think they're this year they're probably 45. I have them ahead of the Bulls. I have him ahead of the
Bulls. I agree. I have him ahead of the Bulls, too. But so maybe a better way to look at it is, like, if you looked at the teams, you'd say Milwaukee and Philadelphia have, like, 60-win potential.
Yes.
They might have injuries. They may not get there. They may be upper 50s. They may be low 60s. But they're, like, 60-win potential teams. Boston, to me, is, like, a 50-win potential team. And then after that, like, you know, the Nets, Pacers, Heat, Magic, whoever, these other teams, these are all teams that are like in the 40s wins potential teams.
Yes.
And that Toronto to me is the same. And so when you look at, and I look at a team and I say, this is a team I would say is like 40 to 45 wins. You know, maybe if they have a great season, they're 48 wins. If they have a bad season though and end up at 35 wins, like, what if Kyrie Irving gets hurt? This dude's injured. He also has a huge injury history.
Yes.
What if Kyrie Irving just gets hurt for 30 games? Like, one, that would be half of the seasons of his career, if I'm just guessing. Like, it wouldn't be some weird thing. It'd be like a coin flip. Like, if that happens, then what? The Nets are probably worse than they were last year.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, it's not hard to, what if Siakam loses, 30 games? Like, what's left on the Raptors that you're scared of? It's not hard to envision any of these teams that are like, they're not super deep or have amazing talent. Like, they're only like one bad event happening away from being a team in the 30 wins. So I agree that everyone we've named so far is ahead of the Bulls. I don't think the Bulls are better than these teams out the gates, but it's just not going to surprise me if all of a sudden the injury luck turns on for the Bulls, they stay healthy. And with their new depth, they end up winning like 45 games and end up ahead of a lot of these teams. Like, I don't think that's the most likely outcome. It's not. But it wouldn't be a surprising outcome to me. Agreed. I wouldn't sit here today and say, I can't see that coming. I could totally see that coming. So, that's where I'm at.
So the teams like that, you've heard my mantra, the 7th pick and 17. 7 pick and 18.
Yeah.
7 pick
seven
and 18. Seed. And then the 7 seed. Right. So, here's why I think, to me, there's like four teams that are battling. And all the points you made about the teams ahead of us are all good. And any one of those teams could fall back, right? But let's just assume.
And probably one of them will.
Yeah, like, exactly. It could be Indiana or the Nets.
But
exactly.
One of them will have the bad thing happen and they'll end up lousy.
Great. But let's look at the teams that are competing for 7 and 8. So,
all right.
All right.